and welcome to Frank Film Club. I'm Maisie Williams and I'm an actor and producer.
I'm Lowry Roberts and I'm a producer and filmmaker.
I'm Hannah Marie Williams and I'm a casting director.
And welcome to our club.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Frank Film Club. We're here for a little bonus episode for you all today, just in case you've been missing us a lot, and it's a very exciting day because we are collaborating with BAFTA to talk about the best British short film category this year. We are chatting with all of the amazing filmmakers who are nominated, and we are so thrilled to have them joining us. For any of you who are listening to this who are short filmmakers or are getting into short filmmaking, please stay tuned as we chat a little bit about how these filmmakers got to where they are now, any tips or tricks they have to extend their limited budget and make their films extra special, and also how it feels for them all to be nominated for a BAFTA.
We love shorts, as I feel like our listeners know. The shorts category, the best British short film category, started in 2013, and they've had a lot of winners or nominees of that category that have then gone on to submit their feature films. So for example, Femme was at first submitted as a short film in 2013, and this year it was longlisted as a feature film. So I feel like some of the people that we're speaking to today might have their features in the BAFTAs in a few years' time. Over half of filmmakers are thought to enter the industry via shorts. I feel like people don't quite realise the importance of shorts sometimes. And for the short filmmakers that are listening, or people that are aspiring short filmmakers, BAFTA have published a free digital guide on financing and promoting shorts with insights from over 40 filmmakers, funders, festival programmers and distributors. So you should definitely check that out. That was very, very useful stuff.
As will the rest of the information come in on this episode. So let me run through who we've got. We've got all of the directors of the films in the short film category this year. So we've got Abdou Cisse, who's the director of Festival of Slaps, Joe Wieland for Gorka, Simon Woods for Such a Lovely Day, Yasmin Afifi of Jellyfish and Lobster, and Elam Erhas for Yellow. We can't wait to dive into the episode with you, so stay tuned for lots of juicy knowledge.
We're also speaking with Dina Musawi, who is the producer of Yellow. So that's fun, because we've turned our hand to producing, and it'll be interesting to hear her tips and tricks on producing short films. How exciting. Okay, let's jump in.
First up, we are speaking to Abdou Cisse, who is the writer and director of Festival of Slaps. Hello, Abdou. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, guys. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. So can you give us a bit of a background on what your route into filmmaking was?
So I'd say my route is probably kind of a bit of an untraditional route. I never went to film school. I've kind of got into this sort of industry by like literally trial and error. So because I just found that I was just interested in doing everything from design to writing scripts to branding and stuff. But then I think a sort of key turning point probably for me was, ironically, I think it was like not too long ago, actually, it was Black Panther with Ryan Coogler. I think he'd done like a talk at BFI. I think it was just quite refreshing to see someone just be themselves creating something at such scale. I was like, oh my God, I could actually do this, you know? Like, I could actually, there's actually stories that I know me and my friends have that can actually be communicated in a way where people can engage with them and people actually want to see these things. So I think from that point on, I started to just make shorts. First one being Serious Things.
Yeah, that's so interesting. We feel like short filmmaking is like an art form in and of itself. You said that you kind of like just, you know, bootstrapped it and pulled this film, like your films together. What was the budget for Festival of Slaps, and how did you bring that money together? How did you kind of like use your own network or your own resources to boost the production value? Like, is there anything that you had to consider when you were writing it to make it like just something that was feasible for you to shoot?
I think there's a level of, when you come to short films, you have to do the work yourself a little bit. There's a level of heavy lifting that you don't necessarily have when you're doing, say, for instance, like a TV show or a feature, where there's so many departments you can rely on. I think everyone has to kind of help each other achieve a certain level of certain greatness, you know, a certain standard of like, all right, cool, if we're aiming for here, how do we help each other do that? You know, as a director for myself, it was, all right, having to help produce or help do story, like do my own storyboards, to do my own treatments, to talking with BBC when it comes to development and liaising with my producers and all of us kind of trying to come up with creative solutions and how we could achieve stuff. There was a lot of heavy lifting from everyone helping each other, you know. So I think there's a level of passion in there that's just so different, you know.
So talking about pulling all of those people together, how do you go about finding the right collaborators for your projects? And who are they and what do you think that they brought to it? Because obviously a lot has come from the edit in this. There's incredible sound. The cinematography is unreal. So yeah, how did you find the right ones and what does that look like for you in all projects?
So for me, I think when it comes to finding collaborators, I just try to look at whether I can work with them as people, you know, whether they're just genuinely cool peeps. I look at that and then I then look at ability and then I then see if those two things pair up. Because you could obviously be with someone that's your mate, but if they can't necessarily do the job, it's a world of headache for everyone, right? So I worked with Joy on kind of helping build the script. She really helped in kind of that sort of initial stage of development. And then as time went on, we started working with Sherry and with George. And both of them kind of like being my producers and putting up with me and putting up with sort of my sort of wacky and wild ideas was just amazing, because I think they equally matched my ambition for the film. And without them, we wouldn't have built up just the sort of diverse and multifaceted team that we had, you know.
So you have made this short that has now been nominated for a BAFTA. What is next?
To be honest, it's hard because when you come into this industry, you're still kind of learning about it, right? And I think what this industry tries to do is funnel you into a certain set path that's kind of tried and tested. And I think naturally, because I've come through this sort of do-it-yourself mentality, I try to reject that sometimes to my agent's dismay and to my, my agent hates. But for me, what I'm interested in is just expanding as an artist. Obviously, I'm working with BBC on a feature. Obviously, want to do TV, more TV, because I just finished last year at the same time as releasing my short. My first debut as a director on TV came out, called Grime Kids on BBC. Weirdly enough, I kind of want to do it all. And I know that's impossible, because there's only one of me. But that's where, like we were saying before, about finding those collaborators to be able to bring those things to life.
It sounds like such an exciting future, and we can't wait to see what comes next. And I think it sounds really fulfilling. You know, at the end of the day, like, you want to be proud of the work that you do, and sort of all of these achievements that everyone bases success off of, like, you know, that's not always what's the most important or impactful. However, being nominated for a BAFTA is like probably the coolest thing, and it's come to you at this point. We'd love to know just like how that feels for you, and like tell us a little more about like what that moment was like.
It's weird because our film has only been out for like 3 months, so much has happened in that time period, and literally for us to kind of like the middle of the third month to get nominated for a BAFTA was just, again, surreal. It's been so surreal. Like, there's like a SpongeBob meme where everything's kind of spinning round the person. That's how it felt like when we got longlisted and nominated. It was like, is this actually really happening? Obviously, all of us love these sort of hallmarks of acceptance, but also recognition. You know, I think it's, for me, I'm just happy, really, really happy for the cast and crew that donated their time and dedicated their time. Again, no one in shorts gets paid the best ever, and people put in a huge amount of time and their efforts, and I'm just happy that work is recognised. And for me, I'm really happy that everyone can just be be like, you know what, it was worth it. It was worth me dedicating 2 months, 3 months to a year of their lives to something, an idea that was just words on the page. And then now it's like a full-fledged thing. So for me, I'm just really happy for that. Really, really happy for that. And then when I found out, yeah, again, I was kind of happy but gutted. I was abroad when it happened, in the back of a cab on the highway in Dubai. And at that point, funny enough, during that day, me and my mate were going on the way to the beach. It was like, you know what? It's the first time in a long time that we've ever been abroad together. Let's just go chill, enjoy. He's doing exceptional things. Let's celebrate. Just be present and celebrate. So I actually put my phone on Do Not Disturb. My producer was trying to update us every 10 minutes, being like, 50 minutes left, 40 minutes left. I was like, yo, I can't do this. I want to, because what I didn't want to do is like, I didn't want to find out we didn't get something and end up ruining the moment with my friends, you know? So I put my phone on Do Not Disturb in the back of a cab, and then suddenly my girlfriend calls me. She gets through. And I thought in my head, if she's calling me, something must have happened. And earlier on, I had a sinking feeling in my stomach that we weren't probably going to get it. Our film's quite sort of an untraditional kind of film. Again, it's come out very quickly. Just wasn't really expecting it. And she told us the news. And imagine being in a cab going at 100 kilometers per hour, and then it's just swaying. So me and my friend are in the back, and we're just going, ah, going crazy. The cab driver's like swerving, like, it's like, ah, we're gonna crash. It's like, we're screaming, but we're screaming because we might feel like we're crashing, but at the same time, we're really happy. And then she's telling us the news. Yeah, she's telling us the news, and it was just absolute chaos. And we just was like, and my friend's not from the film industry as well, which was really refreshing, because again, we had to really talk afterwards. I didn't speak to anyone for like 24 hours. I was like, you know what? Let me just sit with this. Let me just enjoy a moment with my friend, because if I jump on the phone now, quite literally, we won't stop talking till tomorrow. Do you know what I mean? So I'm still getting back to people now. And yeah, it was just an incredible moment. And I think it was good to be abroad and just kind of receive that news, because we just kind of sat with it to kind of think about what it means for me as an independent filmmaker, what it means for someone like my mum, whose story's been turned into something that's BAFTA nominated, and what it means for everyone that's part of the team and my peers as well, what it means for someone like myself who, again, hasn't probably come through the most traditional route, has managed to kind of go into this space and be recognised for it, you know? So I think just getting nominated was a win enough. I think actually making the film, we always say this to each other, it's like, you know what? Actually making it and actually enjoying making it and making something that all of you mess with and all of you like love is actually the point, really. All these other bits and journeys on the way are just stops that we get to enjoy it again.
We're so excited to see what you do next.
Thank you so much for chatting with us. It's been really, really lovely to meet you properly. And as we'll say to everyone today, we really wish you the best of luck on Sunday.
I'm crossing everything. Thank you, guys.
Hi, Joe.
Hey.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast to talk with us about your film Gorka. We're so thrilled to have you. Something that we've been quite curious about is your start into the industry. How did you kind of get to this point?
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I started sort of writing commercials, and I was doing that for a while, and I was writing for other directors. So I was sort of helping them with their stuff and sort of taking a back seat. And then I went to film school in America for 1 year. And that actually sort of, I was during that process, I realized that I was just writing every day and sort of getting it down. But then I dropped out to make Gorka. So it was sort of like I did a year there, and then I came back to England with Gorka, and that's sort of how it began.
Great. And so you shot Gorka in the UK?
Yeah.
And you dropped out with that script. How did you pull together the budget? Because obviously we're all trying to bootstrap it sometimes with certain elements of filmmaking when it comes to shorts. So how did you maximise that budget?
Yeah, so I then went out to production companies Some Such and Solab. And the story was about, yeah, it's about a French student, and Solab's in France, and I've written for them a few times commercial-wise. So I went out to them just with the script being like, look, I've written this thing, let's get the ball rolling. And so they put up some money, and then I went out and just to anyone I'd met before who I'd crossed paths with in the industry, sent it around and sort of begged, borrowed, steal to get to the budget. But this was all with my producer, Alex. But yeah, it was a long slog. I mean, I wrote Gorka in 2020 in August. Yeah. And then we shot in June, 2022. So you can imagine, like, I've spent 2 years, like almost 2 years hustling around and yeah, just trying to get it going. But finally we got there. But it was a long process, I'll tell you that.
So obviously you've got to have collaborators to bring that to life once you've got the budget. Who were these collaborators and how did you find them? And like, yeah, at what point did they come on during that 2 year process?
So it's funny, we actually went through a few cycles of teams because of COVID and things kept changing and there were so many people's availabilities were shifting so much. But Harry Wheeler, the DOP, I met through my brother, who they'd worked together before. And that was the sort of one that kickstarted the whole thing. And yeah, with him and Alex, and then Verity, I also knew through working at Some Such and in the commercials world and through my brother. So we sort of built this team of people who are so much more experienced than me. Like, this was the first thing I've ever made. So I was like out of my depth, and I was surrounding myself with people who are just, yeah, who'd done it a lot and who were super experienced. So that was also, it was definitely for me when we all got down to Bognor Regis and it was 40 people there and me in charge, like it was quite comforting to know that all these people, like, they're so experienced, and surrounding myself with them was great.
Yeah, it's like so inspiring to hear that this was the first thing that you shot, and here you are with the BAFTA nomination. That's so incredible. We'd love to know what kind of comes next. I think, you know, there's a lot of history of shorts to features. Like, are you looking to do something long form? Given that this is the first project, would you like to do more shorts? Like, is there something that's rumbling around right now? What's next on the cards for you?
Yeah, so I'm in Paris now, actually, editing my next short film, which is sort of a funny inversion of Gorka. Like, Gorka's about a French student who comes to England, and now I've just made a French film, all in French, about, which is kind of crazy, and I'm not fluent in French, so it's honestly been a wild experience. But yeah, in terms of features, me and my brother are writing the film that I probably would love to be my first longer piece. And it's similar themes with Gorka, a father and son's journey to Turkey. So yeah, it's sort of an extension of the family in Gorka, because I want to hold that dear, and like, I feel like I can write that because Gorka is based on it's based on a real day that happened. And yeah, my family, I didn't know if they were like offended or proud when they watched it. They were like, it was a funny thing showing them, because they could definitely see the traits in each character in themselves.
Verbatim, is that what happened? Or was it like based on?
Yeah. So Gorka's based on a real day, like in lockdown, or the end of lockdown, my mum got a call saying like, you should come, your father's on his deathbed. And the whole relationship in Gorka between the mum and the father is real. Like, my mum had a difficult relationship with her father, and he didn't like my dad so much. So my dad on the day was like, does he really want me there? Like, do we have to go? My mum's like really British. She's like, we're all going. So cut to the next morning, like 7 of us are in like a big car flying down to the seaside, with my brother's fiance, who's never met him. I know, so English. And basically, like, she came, and that sort of, the whole day, like, of course it was a day full of difficult feelings and sadness and grief and my mum's relationship with him. But it was also like peppered with all these moments of comedy. Luckily, we did get to say our goodbyes, and my mum got to see him and speak to him. But on the way back, I was like, yeah, this day needs to be translated into something.
Amazing. Well, obviously, this is your first film that you've directed. What a nod to get for this. How does it feel, and what does it mean to you to get the nomination?
No, honestly, I didn't see it coming at all. I mean, of course, in the shower a few times, like, I'd be like, oh, that would be the dream. But like, not no way. Like when The Long List came out, I was completely beside myself. And then, yeah, the nominations were just in. Yeah, that moment was really unforgettable. Seeing it at BAFTA and nominated and recognised is sort of, yeah, it's the pinnacle for me. So it couldn't be better.
Well, congratulations. It's very, very exciting.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We wish you all the best of luck on Sunday.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm going to be there, sweaty palms, like sat there. Great, guys. No, thank you so much.
Next, we've got Simon Woods, who directed Such a Lovely Day. Thank you so much for joining us, Simon, today.
No, thanks for having me. It's lovely.
So we're really excited to learn more about how you made Such a Lovely Day and just a bit about your background. So why don't we start with where you started? What's your route been into the film industry and what led you to this point?
So I was an actor. When I left university, I became an actor and I sat on film sets for years and just always wanted to be on the other side of the camera. So you get quite a lot of time when you're an actor when you're filming, but you're not actually in the scene. And I just never went back to my trailer. I always just went and sat in the, you know, behind the monitor and asked people questions and hung out in the truck with people. And I loved being on a film set and being part of a crew making a film. And then I took a sort of roundabout route. I wrote a play, which was on 2 or 3 years ago in London. And then I, off the back of that, I was writing a feature, and then I just had this idea for this short. So I went to BBC Film, who I was doing the feature with, and said, I've got this idea for this sort of horrible, sad little short. And they went for it. And here I am.
I wonder how you found your team and, yeah, sort of, you know, you've been in the industry for a little while in various different ways. And so, yeah, were any of those people that you've met a long, long time ago? How did you pick the right people for this particular project?
So my producers were the producers that I'm developing the feature with. And I love them. Polly Stokes and Emma Norton. So we're just a really good team, and we just really like working on scripts together. And so that's great. And then my sort of longest person I worked with was Dixie Chassé, who is our casting director, who cast me in like my first sort of big job, which was Pride and Prejudice, the 2005 film of that. And she sort of was the assistant casting director on that. So I've known her from, you know, ages and ages and ages. And she was a great person to work with, because she just, she's a sort of powerful person, but B, she just loves talking about people. She just loves like the nitty gritty, like psychological innards of people. So that was really fun. And that was a really fundamental thing for me, because the casting was so key on this particularly. And then we brought in a child casting director, because, you know, the kid in my film is in every single, not just every scene, but almost every shot. So there was going to be no film if he wasn't good. So we had to find somebody brilliant. I loved those casting relationships. It was so nice being on the other side of the casting process, like not auditioning for a thing, but watching people doing that. So that was great. Yeah, I was really lucky with everybody who came on board. Dave, my DOP, I found, because he'd DOP'd a friend of mine's film, and they just said how great he was to work with, and he was lovely. And other people I just found sort of random. It's quite a random scramble making a short film, because it's, you're not offering people proper money, and it's a sort of annoying thing. So you have to do a fair amount of prep for, like, the costumes for a short film, especially with 17 characters in it. So you're asking people for quite a reasonable chunk of their time and effort. And because they've got no budget, really, it's more work than it would be if they could just go into Angels and hire a bunch of costumes. So, it was finding people who were available, who's, like, aesthetic. I met a few different people and chatted about how I sort of the kind of texture of the film and the family, and trying to get the family just right so that they were not awful, but they were awful, but also quite lovely. And yeah, so it was sort of finding a group of people who were up for that, and to make something feel really lived in and textured and natural.
Yeah, it definitely feels like that. And I think that's so much more interesting, isn't it? To know that you can be both of those things, awful and great and more. And I think that really comes across in the film. So you talked about your feature that you're... Are you writing and directing the feature?
I've written. I've just finishing another one, which I'm hoping to direct. That's my hope anyway.
Exciting. So... what will you take from your short film making time into longer form projects?
Oh, that's a good question. So what I realised in this is that you've got to carve... So I think we had time to film the story in this, but we didn't have time for any of the more atmospheric... You know, there were plans for and then we'll after we've shot the... this, we'll come round and we'll do these little nice, all the nice little things, the atmospherics and stuff. And we didn't have time for any of them. So what I know next time is that I have to hold on to those things and make a nice feeling on set. That was, I think, the thing I feel most proud about, was that I think that everyone had a really nice time. We made a horrible film, but we had a nice time doing it. And I always really... I was on lots of film sets, and some of them were lovely and some of them really weren't. And so I sort of felt I really knew the kind of atmosphere I wanted to make and how comfortable I wanted people to feel, and how sort of warm I wanted it and embracing I wanted it to feel. And I think we achieved that, and And I think that gets harder the bigger the film is. The bigger the budget and the more people and crew and horses and things, the harder it is to keep the sort of atmosphere that makes people feel really comfortable to do really good work. So if I'm lucky enough to be able to go on and do a bigger thing, I'm going to fiercely fight for a nice, cosy atmosphere.
I think that's... a very good way to move forward and to just keep that going in throughout your career, for sure. Yeah. So you've made the film and you've been nominated for a BAFTA. Did you see that coming? Or how has that been? What does that mean to you? And how did, when you got the news, how was it?
It's so amazing. It's just been amazing. I was not expecting it at all. I didn't even know the day the BAFTA long list was. I just wasn't even on my radar. I was just sitting at my desk working and I got an email saying, wow. It's amazing. It's brilliant. And I feel so many people, I just wrote this in my shed here, and all these nice people came and made it possible. Some of whom I'd never even met before, just, turned up and made this film happen. And I feel I felt so grateful to everybody. And I feel like this nomination is a way of like saying, oh, look, it wasn't a waste of your time. It was a sort of, you know, it makes it just, I just feel really pleased for everybody else as well as for for the cast and for the boy who's in it. It's great. And, you know, yeah, I just feel really thrilled.
Listen, we wish you all the best on Sunday. We're, we've really enjoyed getting to speak with you and just really pleased for you and your career and everything that comes next.
Oh, thanks so much. I really love chatting. Thank you so much.
So we are now joined by Yasmin Afifi, who was the writer-director of Jellyfish and Lobster. Yasmin, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Please, could you give us a bit of a background on your route into filmmaking and, how you got to this short?
Route into filmmaking. I was born with, this is going way back, but it's, I guess it just like, I was born with Erb's palsy in my right arm. So it meant like for the first 13 years or so of my life, I was like in and out of hospital. I've had like 11 surgeries. So it meant that all I was doing was watching films, just watching loads and loads and loads of films. And so I think my love for film came from there because it was genuinely like my window to the world. And then also around that time, I started writing just because it was my only sort of accessible creative outlet that I could do as well. And so when I hit a certain age of being like, I'm kind of done with these operations, I'm pretty happy with who I am, I'm just going to go about life as is. I just started making loads and loads of films and just working sort of non-film related jobs to fund those films. And I guess kind of got a bit good at it, which got me into Westminster, did my undergrad there and then to the NFTS. And then obviously my grad film from the NFTS is Jellyfish and Lobster. So
it was such a pleasure watching your movie, and so wonderful to hear like how you kind of discovered film. We'd love to know a bit about like your budget for this project and the sort of any consideration you had to take with the script and shooting it to kind of maximize your budget and to make sure that your film turned out to be, you know, everything you wanted it to be.
Yeah, I mean, well, so all the films get a set budget of 18K. And we knew our film was quite ambitious, and there's a lot in there that never made the cut. When I say never made the cut, we didn't shoot it because we didn't have the budget for it. But it was always still relatively contained because it was always set in the care home, and I always wanted it to just focus on two characters in the care home, being Mido and Grey. So the only real consideration, like, to take into account was the underwater sequences. And so at script stage, it was just being very, very specific, because the first few drafts were like, and they're underwater now, and then they're underwater again, and they're doing this underwater. And then the sort of NFTS were like, but you're gonna have to like minimize these underwater sequences. So it was just actually making sure that those were very specific and they had a profound impact on the film, so that they were minimal, but they said a lot in relation to the story and the sort of emotional journeys of the characters. So I think that was the main sort of thing to take into account.
Wow, I can't believe you made this on 18K. That's so impressive.
We got a lot of favours pulled in though as well. So I'll say that.
Well, talking of favours, how do you find your collaborators? Obviously, this was made through the NFTS and your you find your collaborators through that portal. But how do you decide who's the right collaborator to bring your vision to life? What does that process look like for you?
I guess just who is really passionate about the story. And because, like, as mentioned before, like, the making of a film is such a labor of love and everything else, and so there's going to be all sorts of hurdles, and so you want a team that you know is going to stand by you in that. And so I mean, the actual process at the NFTS is all the directors sort of stand and pitch to every single department, so every course at the NFTS, and then those who are interested will approach you. And then you sort of, it's a bit like speed dating with different HODs. And then you sort of make your selection. And so that's how we sort of went about it. Casting for it in terms of those collab, like that, those two, they were just like, I knew I kind of wanted them from the get-go, and they sort of just jumped on board, and the collaboration with them was absolutely incredible. Syed flew from LA on his own pocket to come and do the film twice, actually, because we shot on film, and the first time we shot there were a few scenes that came out soft, and we were like, oh god, and then I had to like call him and say this happened, and without even like questioning it, he was like, that's fine, I'll fly back. And he flew back for one pickup day, again on his own pocket, just because he just loved it so much.
That is mad, but so good to have such commitment from your collaborators, mm-hmm. On your film. And it was obviously so worth it in the end. So yeah, that's really cool. So you've graduated from NFTS with a BAFTA-nominated short film. So what are you planning on doing next? Like, do you think you will do more shorts, or have you got any longer form projects that you're planning, or what are you up to?
At the moment, I'm in development for my debut feature, which is really exciting. So that's sort of like my core focus at the moment. And then, yeah, we'll see what other opportunities sort of come about as well.
Can you tell us anything about this feature?
I guess I'll just say it is the feature for Jellyfish and Lobster.
Amazing. Oh,
cool. So, yeah, that's been really, really fun to write. Because as I was writing the short, it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And it was kind of writing itself. And they were telling me, you need to wheel this back in a bit. Like, this is not a short anymore. And so I kind of just shelved a lot of sort of story arcs that I wanted to explore, a lot of scenes. And so it's just been really fun to kind of go back and pull those in. It gets more wild.
It's got some serious legs, this one.
It's exciting. We're excited to see more.
Very exciting. Yeah, everyone should definitely go check it out. And we will be linking this with BAFTA's limited run on YouTube when that comes out. So with BAFTA then, how does it feel to be in this point when you've just graduated, as Maisie says? How did the news come to you, and what does it feel like to be in this moment as a BAFTA nominee for 2024?
God, like, it feels incredible. It's such a huge honour, and I just, like, I didn't think no one ever does, really. Like, you make something that just comes from a place of truth, and you're not really sure how anyone's going to receive it. So it's just been incredible, and also just the journey the film has had through festivals, and the reaction it's got, the amount of messages I've got from people to say, like, thank you for this film, and I relate to it, you know, I've lost so-and-so from cancer, or someone I know at the moment is going through it, and yet your film sort of made us laugh and kind of just gave us, like, momentary joy in a situation that's otherwise pretty heavy. And that was the intention that I had when making the film. So those messages have meant everything to me. And I think being BAFTA nominated is only really going to allow the film to have a bigger reach. And that's special for me, because I just want as many people to see it, just because I know how many people, unfortunately, do relate to it.
Well, thank you so much for chatting with us about it. It's really exciting, and so excited to know that you're making the feature version of it. So we can't wait to see that as well. But best of luck on Sunday at the awards.
Thank you so much.
Okay, and finally, we are joined by the wonderful director and producer of Yellow. We're here with Elham Esas and Dina Moussaoui. Thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
It's an honour.
So we've really loved watching your movie, and I think it would be lovely to kick us off if you could chat a little bit about how the both of you met, and your sort of journeys into the industry up until this point.
when I first came from Iraq to Britain, I got into acting and I was a child actor. And then I sort of realised I didn't have much control and I needed, you know, some stability. And then I started producing and I worked in theatre. So I was producing in theatre and I still am. And then me and Ilham sort of started working together and that was my journey into film.
I was born in Afghanistan and I left during the first era of the Taliban in the 90s. So I came to the UK in 99. And I got a film by accident on an open casting call. I was in a film called The Kite Runner. So I didn't know anything about acting or anything. And then I did this film and we shot it in China and I came back and I went to school and went to uni and got a job. And there was a day when I just kind of reminisced on my acting days on The Kite Runner. I was like, man, that was good fun. And this is boring. So I was like, maybe I should get back into that. So then I kind of stumbled back into acting and I'm still an actor, but I find that as Maisie knows as well, it's such a hard industry, especially when you're starting out. So I wanted a bit more control over my destiny and over the stories that I'm telling as well, because a lot of the first projects that I used to do was a lot of stereotypes of being, you know, the terrorist or being the villain, which I do enjoy. I like playing those roles. They're challenging and it's exciting stuff. But I wanted something deeper and more nuanced, and I could only do that with stories that I wanted to tell. Do you know what I mean? So that's kind of my graduation into filmmaking, and now I'm just head over heels in love with the craft and the art, and I think I'll spend the rest of my life learning and trying to make good films.
We met a few years ago because Ilham was actually acting in a play called The Jungle, produced by Good Chance Theatre, where I work. And that's how we met and we became friends. And then I kind of started following him on social media and I started watching all his films and thinking, oh yeah, he's good at making films. I want to get involved. Ilham, I don't know if you want to give your side of the story.
Yeah, no, we were doing a play together and Dina was involved with the production side of The Jungle, and I was always through speaking to her and talking about just general stuff and general life things, you get a sense of a person and a sense of how they see the world and a sense of what they think and how they think. And me and Dina were always kind of like-minded and kind of like the same thing and were into the same stuff. And then it was just a natural progression to working together.
So I'm really interested in how this film came to be, because it feels very big for, like, was it shot in the UK? I want to know a lot of different things. Maybe we could relate it to budget in that conversation. So how did you get the funding? And then how did you stretch that funding for something which feels really international and I'm very interested. And just to say as well, Ilham, you're in the short, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right.
I guess when we first got together and had the idea, it was around April 22. And I said, we sat in a cafe and I said, okay, I'll go make a budget. I'll put a budget together. You go and write the script. And then Ilham said, and I said, oh, I don't think we can raise this money like in 2 months. And Ilham was like, I have to make this film and I have to make it this year. It's so important. And I was like, okay. How am I going to raise this money? Oh my God. And we actually didn't make it on the budget that we needed. We made it on a lot less just because Ilham was like, I have to make this film. So we kind of did it a bit guerrilla style, didn't we?
Yeah. We had a budget of £3,000. And it was a one day
shoot.
That
wasn't the budget I made. My mind was a lot more than that. Yeah. But we ended up making it on 3,000.
Yeah, we made it on £3,000. It was a one day shoot. And we had the exterior stuff shot in Afghanistan. That my friend Kareem Shaw is an amazing documentarian. He makes documentaries, shot over there. And we shot it in a fabric store in Hackney in a day. And yeah, it's gone on to this amazing circuit and resonated with so many people. So it was honestly a labor of love. We went into it thinking we have to make this film because what's happening in Afghanistan, you know, after the Taliban came into power, the decree that they passed with wearing the full veil as well as not having women being able to go to university. There's 20 million women in Afghanistan who have no access to their own future. There's 2.8 million girls who can't go to school. Afghanistan is the only country in the world that doesn't allow girls to go to school. And that was, we just couldn't stand for that. So that's kind of the inception of the film and why we wanted to make it.
Fair play. I feel like, it sounds like it was made off of passion rather than money.
Yeah, absolutely.
Passion and necessity, because we felt like we had to make it then to sort of, otherwise, you know, things drop off the headlines very quickly, don't they? It had already dropped off the headlines, and women in Afghanistan were feeling like they were invisible to the West, and no one was talking about their situation anymore and what they were going through. And so this was our way of keeping that going and keeping people talking about it.
Mm-hmm. So important. You two, we've heard a little bit about how you two came to collaborate together, but would love to hear more about your other collaborators and how you found them. Obviously, you couldn't pay them much, so how do you bring them on and find them, and how does it work?
Well, me and Afsana, my lead actress, Afsana Dehruya, we've worked together on another short film, my first short film that I did, which is when I got the bug for filmmaking. And ever since, we've just been really good mates and have had great chemistry on screen. Actually, initially, I did audition Afghan girls because Afsana's Iranian, and I wanted to be as close to the story as possible. But unfortunately, in my culture, girls in cinema don't really mix. It's a cultural thing, and I had to audition like my own cousins, and one of them was really great for the role, but then her mom said, oh no, we can't allow her to be on screen. So then I got in touch with Afi, and I was like, look, I've kind of scouted the world and I couldn't find anything, so it'd be an honor if you could jump onto the project. And she gracefully said yes, and you know, she's always just elevated all my films. In terms of my DOP, Yanis Manolopoulos, who I've worked with before on a few projects as well, and we're just kind of tight and we're friends, and we knew as soon as I sent him the script, he was like, I'm in, whatever you need, let's work together. So we had our core team, kind of already people who I've had history with that I've brought in, my other producer Azim Bhatti, who I've worked with before as well. And then we kind of worked from there and just kind of started looking for other HODs to come on, and for very little money.
But people know each other as well, you know, like Yanis brings on the camera assistant and people bring their team with them as well, which helps a lot.
And we had such minimal crew as well. Yanis was our DOP and first AD, so he'd be over my shoulder.
There's a lot of doubling up going yeah. here. Director, actor.
Yeah, we have to.
It's very economic.
I put Dina and our costume designer under the chauderie for the exterior shots. I was like, right, you guys are walking past camera, action.
It's all about finding people that elevate you as an artist, and it seems like that's what you both do. So speaking of, how does it feel to be at this moment, 2024 BAFTA nominated? How did the news come to you, and what does it mean to you, you know, to be here?
Oh man, it's such a privilege, and honestly, for BAFTA to recognize our little film and the issue that it deals with, it gives us a platform to kind of bring that visibility to Afghan women. The news cycle is so, you know, it's so secular and it has such a short memory, but we forget that there are millions of women who need to be heard and their voices need to be listened to and they need help. So we're so grateful to BAFTA for recognizing the issue and for celebrating this little film, which was just a bunch of friends getting together and making a film about something they cared about, for them to recognize that and to invite us into the BAFTA family. So we're so grateful. So thank you to BAFTA and all the BAFTA voters and the jury. Yeah.
Well, best of luck on Sunday. We're really excited to see what happens, but we're really excited for both of your futures. And thank you for chatting with us today as well.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
So the EE BAFTA Film Awards are going to be on Sunday this week, Sunday the 18th of February. We'll be watching. Really excited to see what the outcome is.
And if you want to watch any of the shorts that we've discussed today, you can go on to BAFTA's YouTube channel and see them all there ahead of the awards. And Thank you so much for listening.
We'll be back next Wednesday, back to regular programming, where we'll be listening and chatting to a film at length. But thank you so much for tuning in for this very special episode in collaboration with BAFTA.
This podcast was presented by Wrapped.